Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, sounds like General Motors has finally gotten the picture when it comes to the Chevy Volt, one that most of us had a long time ago when people realized that this was a car that did not work well. There was never really any demand for it. It was costing well over $40,000. Oh, yeah, it was bursting into flames for the few people that did drive it. In one story, I remember Fox News tried to do a test drive, and it conked out before it even got out of the city. This has been not a good run for the Chevy Volt. The only person who apparently still believes in this is President Obama, who's still offering a huge credits to people who still buy them, and he even said he wants to buy one. But GM itself is taking a temporary leave of absence, you might want to say, from the Volt. Unfortunately, they are going to start making them again in a few weeks. But right now, they're just retooling to reassess demand. And they blame the media, Jim, for the negative perceptions that people have of the Chevy Volt. The good news here, of course, is that reality is starting to dawn on GM. And once again, it proves that Obama's got no clue on energy, which ought to be good for the Republican nominee.
Yeah, I mean, this is a mixed bag of a martini, Greg, just because think about how depressed the Pentagon is that their new incendiary device has been taken out of production. My understanding is the plan was to drive the Volt towards the enemy, have the drivers jump out, and then just watch the Volt burst into flames and cause problems for the enemy. Look, here's the thing. Someday there may be a market for the Volt. I just would prefer that, you know, those who wanted to buy it would pay the, you know, costs that cover the cost of production, as opposed to taxpayers having to subsidize this to an unbelievable amount. And, you know, there are a lot of things that are nice in theory but don't necessarily work very well in reality or in the real market. If you cannot – what is the current going price for a Chevy Volt? Was it $40,000, $50,000?
Oh, at least. Yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot for a car for a lot of people. And – you know, if you're going for the luxury market, fine, that's hunky-dory. I think, you know, in a way, this did turn into a boutique vehicle, the Tiffany's of automotive design, you know, except that there are a lot of people who need to drive, you know, Toyotas and Subarus and, you know, family minivans and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. So the Volt was just never going to be a particularly good option for them. And it kind of, you know, suggested this disconnection between Obama and his rhetoric and the actual needs of people who need to drive things. And perhaps this is what happens when you have been driven around from place to place for, you know, basically since about 2006 or so, perhaps even before then. Look, the Volt is imploding. The stimulus didn't work. And Obamacare may be declared unconstitutional. 4 more years, huh, Greg?
Jim, I'm going to make a bold prediction here. When President Obama leaves office, which hopefully will be in about 10 months, but he could get his magic 5 years here. Either way, betting he will never own a Chevy Volt, regardless of whether they fix it or not, because this is a guy who thinks everybody else should be doing stuff and not him. This is a guy who's going to be chauffeured around in big, long stretch, fortified vehicles. And that doesn't sound like a Chevy Volt to me. So I'm
Greg, you skeptic, you cynic. This man said he was going to purchase a Chevy Volt as soon as he was able to. And, you know, it's not like everything he says comes with an expiration date.
On to martini number two now. And Jim, you and I are both old enough to remember what it was like when the Soviets cooked the books on elections. I guess it's improved a little bit in the Putin era and the fact that there are actually other people on the ballot. So there's even like this modicum of competition. But yesterday, officially anyway, Vladimir Putin got about 60% of the vote, avoided the runoff. And once again, surprise, surprise, he's the new leader of Russia. Here's his victory speech, or at least part of it, through a translator.
This is a fair and honest victory. We will work hard, we will succeed, and we invite you to get together and unite for the benefit of our country. I promised you victory. We have won. Long live Russia.
But not apparently everyone so convinced that this election was on the up and up.
We've reported about 4,000 violations, with an especially dire situation in St. Petersburg and in the Moscow region. We've uncovered these violations. We will be compiling an information database which would allow us to gather all documentation to go to court.
Jim, so much bad going on in this martini. First of all, Putin is clearly hungering to be back in an authoritarian type role of where the country was before the fall of the Iron Curtain. The other bad part is that most of his competitors were probably actually worse than him, including the guy that's still the head of the Communist Party and another guy who's a big-time nationalist. I think the guy we were cheering for is the owner of the New Jersey Nets, but since he hadn't been able to turn the nets around, apparently that didn't get him a lot of support back in Russia. But we're getting a little frostier, I think, as time goes on here, especially as Putin keeps cozying up to people we don't really like very much.
I am Chris Humphrey's employer, comrade, and I approve this message. I guess the reset button of the Obama administration got reset too far back to the Soviet days, it would seem. You know, it's worth noting, and it's kind of fascinating how Putin was the Time Man of the Year a few years ago, and then it seems like we'll go months at a time without paying much attention to what's going on in Russia, and you talk about a bad martini, a bad vodka martini, apparently.
Yes.
This you know, it's very bad news that this is a society that appeared like it was moving in the direction of freedom and now seems to be backsliding pretty severely. There's obviously arguments that this is an oligarchy or a corruptocracy or a Kremlinocracy, you know, that basically the bad guys are back in charge of Russia. And I will offer Obama a molecule or two of sympathy on this, that are not a great deal of options here, that we don't have enormous leverage over a country that has thousands upon thousands of nuclear warheads. I don't know if Putin is rational in the way that you or I would, because really there's not that much. It's not like this, Freudian slip there. I nearly called them the Soviet Union. It's not like Russia and the United States have to be enemies, but it appears that they kind of define themselves in opposition to the West, and that if we say red, they say blue, no pun intended. if we say up, they say down. It just kind of feels like defying the West is one of the ways that Russia sees itself as being a proud and strong nation that is subservient to no one. So I am not going to pretend that this, you know, handling Russian relations is not challenging or difficult. Having said that, the fact that Putin is now running the show without even the pretense of Medvedev or anything like that is not encouraging. And also, there are more than a few reports that Putin is vehemently anti-American, more than a little bit paranoid, and does not see things, you know, in a way that you or I would consider rational. That he very much believes in conspiracy theories and things like that. Perhaps the absolute worst case of President George W. Bush having trouble with his contacts ever yeah. was when he looked into Putin's eyes and saw a good person. So I'll drink to that and hope that there's no what was that radioactive element that they used to go after a dissident in London and irradiated like half of London in the process? The polonium, that was it. Yeah. I hope there's no polonium in these martinis, Greg.
Yeah, that would be good. On to martini number three now, Jim. And tomorrow is Super Tuesday. 10 states are going to the ballot box. Most are going to have the results known tomorrow. There are a couple caucuses that are going to extend for a while. You and I have virtually no excitement in Virginia, so if anyone's looking to cross paths with me at the polls tomorrow, you're going to be waiting a while. because in Virginia, only Mitt Romney and Ron Paul got on the ballot. Everybody else failed to actually pay attention to the new guidelines and get themselves eligible for the ballot. In Ohio, Rick Santorum, who's basically staking the future of his campaign in Ohio, never really bothered to actually put forward a slate of delegates in the parts of the state where he is strongest. So, Jim, we're looking once again at missteps in this campaign for people who want to be the nominee and the next commander-in-chief. It'd be nice to have your ducks in a row on something as simple as being on the ballot and having delegates ready to go should you actually win. I don't think that's asking too much.
It is not, Greg. I had an interview with Governor Bob McDonnell of Virginia on Friday. The transcript of all of that will be posted on NRO, I believe, tomorrow morning. McDonnell has endorsed Romney, so it's not like he will have the challenge of not having his preferred candidate on the ballot. You know, so I said, so what do you think of it? He said, well, I'm very disappointed. I wish all four candidates had been on the ballot. He wants to see a vibrant democracy, but he very much believes that the Virginia requirements were fair. There's nothing unreasonable about expecting 10,000 signatures to get on the ballot and 500 in each congressional district. That he managed to do it twice, and that they've seen plenty of candidates do it from the Democratic Party, Republican Party, and the Libertarian Party. There's really not any excuse for that. And he says, look, if you can't get 10,000 signatures, not even votes, signatures,
right,
in Virginia, how are you going to run a government that has more than a million employees in the greatest country in the world? I think that's a legitimate point to make to the Gingrich campaign, which submitted the signatures, but the signatures did not have enough who were properly who did not match with current voter rolls and current addresses and stuff like that. And the other one is that the Rick Santorum, man of the hour, did not submit any petitions. At some point, his campaign looked at it and said, "We're not going to do this. So we're not, you know, we're not going to have enough by the time of the deadline. So we're just not even going to try." And that is not encouraging.
No.
That is not the hallmark of a top-tier campaign. We will see how things shake out. But and by the way, worth noting, because a lot of people, listeners, I could say, oh, well, you know, just write them in.
Nope.
You can't. Virginia primaries, there are no write-in options. And you can argue about whether that law is right or not right, or how it should shake out. But I do not have the option of writing in anyone tomorrow. My options are Mitt Romney and Ron Paul. And listeners can probably guess which direction I'm leaning in. But we will see how things shake out. Other states, you know, it's kind of fascinating how challenging it has been to run on a very basic Republican Party presidential primary in a whole bunch of states.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. And so you already have, I saw some folks, big supporters of Newt, for example, on Twitter saying, Virginia people, you got to vote for Ron Paul so we can play delegate keep away from Mitt Romney. So if you see a huge infusion for Ron Paul, it's not necessarily because Ron Paul suddenly got on a huge upswing for the state of Virginia. But we'll see if a little bit of spoiler plays out tomorrow in Virginia. And obviously there's big delegate stakes in Georgia where Newt's pretty much banking everything, and Ohio where both Romney and Santorum are putting in a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. So we'll see, Jim. I'm sure it'll be a late night tomorrow night, so we should probably get some rest tonight.
Late night, early morning as well.
Exactly. Ah, Super Tuesday. Only 10 states this year, so it's kind of a mini Super Tuesday. But we'll take it. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.